The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network. Want to fearlessly explore your creative spirit? Join artist Susie K. Edwards for Path of the Butterfly, a weekend workshop at Omega Institute's beautiful campus in Rhinebeck, New York, May 24th through 26. Experiment with a variety of art forms, engage in mindfulness, walking, and silent meditation, and discover a new and free-flowing creative vision. This workshop is for beginners and professional artists. Learn more at eomega.org/thrive.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Support for this show comes from the Beyond Suffering Bible, a Bible for people who want to understand what it looks like to think and live like a Christian in the midst of hardship. It is ideal for caregivers, ministers, or the person who is suffering. Begin your journey from endless struggles to God's infinite hope at beyondsufferingbible.com.
From Spirituality and Health magazine, this is Essential Conversations. Our guest today is Rabbi Ilana Zaman, the first woman rabbi from a family spanning six generations of rabbis. Ilana received her rabbinic ordination from the Jewish Theological Seminary, and she's currently a chaplain, a faculty member of the Harborview Medical Center. She's a renowned speaker, workshop facilitator, and the author of a new book, The Forever Letter, Writing What We Believe for Those We Love. A review of the book appears in the September-October issue of Spirituality and Health magazine, and that's going to be the focus of our conversation. Rabbi Ilana, welcome to Essential Conversations.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I just do have to correct something, which is I think I'm adjunct. I'm just as a chaplain for the CPE program. I just want to make it clear so that...
I was giving you a promotion, and then you could have gone and got... Raise.
You were, but I like to be honest. You know, I go by honesty.
All right. Well, at least one of us does. That's good. So we're going to talk about your book, which I've read, and it really is interesting. And it's something that I've been involved with for a very long time, and I love your take on it. But I'm sure most of the people in the audience have never heard of this idea of a forever letter, which is your take on an old Jewish tradition called the ethical will. And in fact, as I think about it, I imagine most Jews who are listening to this show don't know what an ethical will is. So why don't we start with that? Give us some background on the forever letter, link it to the ethical will, and then tell us how you've updated it for today.
Okay, sure. The forever letter was inspired by this medieval Jewish tradition of the ethical will, a letter that fathers in the earlier period and later a mother or parents would write to their children to share their ethical and religious values and precepts. In Hebrew, the word for these letters is tzivaot, or commandments. And many, though by no means all, expressed a sense of commandedness in their tone. These ethical and religious precepts were found in the holy books, the Torah, the Talmud, and others. But there are so many precepts in the whole of tradition. What parents wouldn't want to share pieces of the tradition that they felt strongly about, or uplift some wisdom that they thought their child or children may benefit from hearing? So given the opportunity, who doesn't want to get a little more personal? What parent wouldn't want to? Around these ethical wills or commandments or even letters, they were in the letters nigeret, and there was a sense of, sometimes they were called an nigeret as well, there was a sense of urgency. Some parents wrote their letters to their children early on in the children's lives, you know, shortly after they were born, and then added to them over the years. And still others wrote theirs at the end of their lives, or what they thought to be at the coming to the end of their own lives, or maybe even before setting out on a journey that they were afraid of a safe return. And so it's from these ancient letters that the forever letter was born. And what's cool about actually the ethical wills when they were done in their period was that during that time, it was part of the ethical literature of that period, and there were a lot of ethical treatises and homilies being written by scholars, but this was open to the everyday person. So the Forever Letter is based on this, and it's, the Forever Letter is a term I coined for a heartfelt letter that we write to the people who are most important to us, to share our values, our wisdom, our appreciation, our forgiveness, and our love. And the hope is that our letter will be so meaningful to the person or persons we're writing to that they will want to hold on to it forever. Like an ethical will, a tziva'ah or an igeret, a forever letter is written from a place of authenticity, authentically putting your values and wisdom on the page, putting yourself on the page. I'd say the tone encouraged in a forever letter is, however, a less commanding tone, more a stating of hard truths with love, and a speaking in a way that shows you're attuned emotionally, spiritually, humanly, psychologically to the people in your life you're writing to. And it need not only be children that you write to. The forever letter is a letter anyone can write to anyone. So the question are really, what do you most want to say to the people you love about them, about you, about your relationship? How can you honor them, uplift them, believe in them? What do you hope for them? For what do you have to ask forgiveness? What do you need to forgive? Have you expressed your love?
I mean, maybe. So would you give this?
Yeah.
I mean, I always practice the thing with ethical will is something that was given to the person after the author of the letter has passed away.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the way you're defining is really you could give it to them at any time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes people would put these letters, sometimes actually, yeah, the ethical will, I think the tradition in general was to leave to be found after your death, though I do think some were shared a little bit, you know, before perhaps the person died, but it's a little more common, I think, to want to share. And the reason I suggest doing that is because, well, let me tell you a story. There was a man in a workshop that I led, and he had to go into his mother's safe deposit box to pick out some papers for her because she was going through a health crisis. And in the safe deposit box, he saw a letter that was for him, and he was so excited, but he couldn't read it yet because she was still living. And so he kind of looked forward. What does this letter say? And after her death, and when he went to the safe deposit box, the letter was no longer there. And it was really sad for him, and he was in tears as he spoke about it. Now, who knows what was in the letter, if it felt too heavy-handed or the mother took it out. It's unclear, but this need and want to hear from the people we love is so huge.
Maybe her letter just said, "You never call me," and she decided, you know, maybe it's too late for that one.
Maybe. But you asked a question I didn't quite answer, which was after death or before, but people will put them in their underwear drawers to be found later. But the thing that is that if you share it while you're still alive, and most of us have issues of, you know, that we want to ask for forgiveness or offer forgiveness or just, you know, highlight something that maybe we weren't as clear about because maybe we hurt someone's feelings or someone hurt us, we want to honor them. So if we do it while we're still alive, we have the opportunity to change the relationship and to connect in a deeper way. And that's the beauty of it, because things go unsaid. And then after someone's gone, you know, this feeling of I should have, I wish I only had. And this is an opportunity to do so. And by doing it in writing, it gives the beauty of that is you don't call someone, maybe you're not talking to someone for a while, and you call them, they might not answer the phone, they may not know what to do because it's such a shock. But if you send a letter, they can look at it a few times, they can peruse it, they can take it in over time, and that is a blessing.
And you can write it and rewrite it and make sure it says exactly what you want it to say. I actually did this for my grandson. My grandson is not yet 2. And I wrote a series of letters. Actually, I used the Hebrew alphabet. So we did 22 letters, short letters to him that while he was in utero over that 9-month period. And I wrote to him about what my beliefs are and how I understand Judaism and the kind of person I hope he grows up to be. And my wife took them and put them in actual letter format. She made envelopes. She illustrated the letters, and then she folded them up and put them in envelopes that she made. And there's a book for him that she illustrated. And the letters, each page of the book has a letter in a slot that when he's old enough, whenever that would be, if the book survives, you know, that he can pull it out and read what I was thinking about while he was growing in his mother's belly. But, you know, when I had a synagogue, we did this, and I didn't think of it as broadly as you did. I was thinking of it in terms of a letter of, this is what I believe, I guess the way you wrote in the subtitle, which I loved, writing what we believe for those we love. And I would encourage people to write them late in life for their children and their grandchildren, if they had any, or nieces or nephews or whoever they wanted to do it for. And one of the things that would come up on a regular basis is people would say, but I have nothing to say. I don't know what I believe. So how do you respond to that when someone says, I mean, when you talk about forgiveness and talking about issues that have happened or that you're commenting on from the past, but what if you're passing on your beliefs and you're just not, I don't know, people would say, I just don't know what I believe. I'm afraid to write it down because I could be wrong.
You know, well, that's the fear of writing in general anyway, because, right, you know, we write something and then we look at it the next day and we're like, you think it's beautiful. And then 2 days later, oh, you know, it really doesn't look so good. So, you know, one day we're a genius, the next day we're a complete idiot, right? But there are people who have said things like that, but I don't put it when I say, what's most important to you to share with the people you care about? And phrasing it that way is, or what are some of your values? And I do different writing exercises with people. And, you know, when I start with prompts, and the book is filled with those as well. And the idea is that, you know, if you're sitting down to write, and it feels like an awesome task, like, who can do this? And no, I can't possibly do this. And people keep wanting to put it off because it's hard. It's hard to sit down and do. And so just having little prompts and exercises to respond to creates a kind of, what shall I say, like a file of material that then people are getting it out. They're getting out their thoughts. They're getting out their values, their wisdom, their love, just through answering some questions. Like, what's the most important to you? And people begin to write. What's most important? What do they believe? What do they care about? And then the belief feeling kind of just emerges. And there are people who are not a part of any faith, and that's fine. And maybe what they believe is something to do, they're artists, and they believe in art and expressing art. And that's what they want to talk
about.
So they do it
that way. Yeah, I think we've been clear, but just on the off chance that we haven't, I mean, this is not a book about Jews or for Jews or about Judaism. I mean, this is, you've really taken this this tradition from Judaism, but universalized it. In a beautiful way. And there were two things in the book that I think will help answer my question about when people say, well, I don't know what to write, or I don't know, you know, what I believe.
Want to fearlessly explore your creative spirit? Join artist Susie K. Edwards for Path of the Butterfly, a weekend workshop at Omega Institute's beautiful campus in Rhinebeck, New York, May 24th through 26th. Experiment with a variety of art forms, engage in mindfulness, walking, and silent meditation, and discover a new and free-flowing creative vision. This workshop is for beginners and professional artists. Learn more at eomega.org/thrive.
First of all, you've got lots of stories in here, you know, of people wrestling with these forever letters. And then your chapter 7 is thoughts on the writing process. And you really help people get through that and provide a lot of prompts. So it's like having a coach sitting with you if you work through the book. If you work through the book and just don't read the book, you'll probably end up with a forever letter, or at least a rough draft of one by the time you finish the book. And I thought that was really a very smart way of doing this. The other thing I wanted to ask you, and you really answered it, I think, because you said you could do it through art. Again, back in my congregational rabbi days, I had this wonderful man who died very young. He had two little kids, and he wanted to do this and never got around to doing it until he was too weak to write. But he was a broadcast journalist. He was an international correspondent, and he with a local station, and he got people to set up cameras and sound equipment in his. He was dying at home in sort of a hospice situation at home, and he had them set up a little studio in his bedroom, and he did it the way he did the his news shows every night. And wow. He talked to the kids directly, and they had his voice, and he did the ethical will. I mean, he knew what he wanted to say. He just could no longer, put pen to paper. And what was really cool is we used part of the ethical will or forever letter. We used it at his funeral. He gave his own eulogy, in a sense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then his TV station used part of the audio as their close out at when it would have been his broadcast. They ended with him talking to his kids and through them to the audience. It was really powerful. So that was a long intro to the question. if people don't want to write, they could tape it, they could paint it, they could do a lot of different things.
Yeah, absolutely. People can approach us in any way they want. I do suggest writing initially. Because sometimes I think that when we write, we can get to a deeper place than we might not get to otherwise. And I think sometimes we think we are someone, and as we write, we realize maybe we're not the someone that we think we are.
Tell me more about that.
So, I mean, I don't know. When I sat down to write a forever letter to my son, and I wrote it when I was about 44 and he was 6 and a half. And I've written others since then. And the beauty, like when you spoke about when you wrote, based on each letter of the alphabet, all of these letters that your wife collected to put in that special, booklet. There's something about this. There's just something about this idea of. I lost my train of thought. I was so excited about it, and then I lost it. Where was I? Rami, help me out. Help me out. I was getting so excited.
Well, so you were talking about how people think of themselves one way, but then in the writing process.
So yeah, exactly. So I was sitting there and I was writing this letter to my son, and I was, just when I put his name on the page, I began to cry because I realized that, I want to be around to see him grow up, but who knows what's going to happen? I mean, we don't know what's going to happen in the world. Look at what just has been happening in our world. The terrorism, the violence, the sudden explosions or shootings, we don't know. And we don't know what age it will happen at either. So I sat down and I wrote this letter and I'm writing it. And as I'm writing it, I'm thinking like, I wanted to say this special, sing this special song to him in the morning. And as I wrote it, I realized, oh my gosh, I didn't do that. I thought I was going to, and I didn't. And some other things, I was going to do this with him, and I didn't. And so what were my values? Were my values really what I thought they were? How come I wasn't living them? Or did some of those values kind of go more into the background, and different values were the values that were now more in the forefront? And so the beauty of writing this kind of letter is not that it's not writing it just for the people you're writing to, but when you write it and when you sit down and use the writing process, you're actually learning a lot about yourself, about who you are and who you aren't. And it can help to also help clarify, who you maybe want to become that you are not yet, what maybe you need to shed to be able to get there. I think in that way too.
Have you shared this one letter in particular that you wrote for your son? Have you shared it with him?
Well, it's very funny. I did at one point. And my son is not a reader. He really doesn't like to read. And so I had a book launch the other evening. And as part of that, I read sections of it. And he was there. And so I
know he was there.
Pieces of it. I know he's heard pieces of it. He's at this point he is 17, so he has heard pieces, and I think he was cool with it. I'm not sure I would share a letter that I wrote to him more recently because as he gets older and stuff, there's more personal things. When you're going to a 4-year-old, you're anticipating who this person will become. I've written to him several letters over the course of the years.
What about in your work as a chaplain? When you go to people, and I mean, maybe you don't do this, but do you suggest this when you're working with people in the hospital?
I visit the hospital a little less these days. I do more teaching, but I do sometimes visit. I'm working more with elders in this context. And yeah, I've worked with them to create these letters before. And in fact, we had a celebration at one point where in the retirement community where I work, I introduced the concept and invited people who wanted to do it and that I would help. And several people really took me up on it. And we had a celebration evening where we invited the families of people.
Wow.
And we had the letters, you know, put in envelopes, and each person read just a little section. And then their family came up and they handed out these letters. And it was, you know, a time of tears and beauty and love. And the families didn't quite know what they were coming to. They thought that, you know, but it ended up being this just beautiful experience.
And that is really powerful.
It was really powerful. And it can be, again, it doesn't, people wait, like you had said, people wait until the later years, but there is something about doing it a couple times or many times in life you could do it, because as you say, it's the relationship about you with you and that person at that period in time. It's who they were when they were that age, who you were when you were that age. And that's sort of what you did with your volume that you created at different points in time, you know, to be able to look back and to have that as a gift, not just, you know, what's going on in life, but what do I believe? What do I feel? What's our relationship? It's a very powerful thing.
It really is a powerful thing. And you wrote a powerful book about it. So I hope people will be inspired by our short conversation to get the book and to actually do this. Though I can hear somebody in their head saying, "Oh, I'll put it on Facebook," but no, don't do that. Don't do that. This is, you know, it's interesting because it's not only, and you know, its roots are ancient, but the technology is old. You know, the technology to sit down and actually write something out is far more intimate than, you know, sending an email or something like that. So you've done, I think, all of us a really great service with this book. So thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. This, you're right. This ability to be reflective is not something we do as well in this day and age with all of the tweets and Twitters, and not that that's bad. I'm not commenting saying it's bad, but there is time for reflection that is really important.
Yeah, and writing provides us with that. So this was really very, very helpful, very timely book. Our guest today was Rabbi Ilana Zeiman. She's the author of The Forever Letter, Writing What We Believe for Those We Love. A review of the book appears in the September-October issue of Spirituality and Health magazine. You can learn more about Rabbi Ilana's work on her website, ilanazeiman.com. So, Ilana, again, thanks so much for speaking with us on Essential Conversations.
And thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Support for Essential Conversations comes from the Beyond Suffering Bible, a Bible for people who want to understand what it looks like to think and live like a Christian in the midst of hardship. It's ideal for caregivers, ministers, or anyone who's suffering. Begin your journey from endless struggles to God's infinite hope at beyondsufferingbible.com. Essential Conversations with Rabbi Rami is a project of Spirituality and Health magazine. Please log in to spiritualityhealth.com to subscribe to the magazine in print or digital formats, and download the iTunes app for this podcast. Essential Conversations is produced by Ezra Baker, and our program coordinator and executive producer is Al Matassi. I'm Rabbi Rami. Thanks for listening.
I'm Dr. Mona Lisa, and I've been a medical intuitive for over 30 years. Let me help you find new ways to heal physical and emotional problems. Be a part of my Healthy Living Intuitively podcast studio audience every week. Follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mona Lisa fan page, and Instagram, Dr. Mona Lisa 1, to get that information. I answer audience questions, and you can learn from people calling in that might be dealing with the same things that you are. Follow Healthy Living Intuitively, part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network, and wherever you get your podcasts.